great. It's good to look around God's word, isn't it? And we get into it. As it's already been mentioned, this passage has become particularly pertinent over the last week or so, as we've seen all the terrible things that are going on in Iraq at the moment. So it's really helpful that we can just have a look at it today and see what God wants to say to us. There should be a slideshow that comes up as well. So if we just have a look at that, we're looking at this, standing in the fire, Daniel chapter 3. It's an amazing passage. It's great. We've had the story already. We know something of the background, what's gone on and what should be happening. So we're just going to look through the passage. We're going to come up with a couple of points and we're going to see how we can apply that to our lives. If we could bring up the next slide. If you're my age or older, you might recognise this picture. If you're younger, you probably won't, actually, so I need to fill you in on the background. This is a picture from 1989. There were some student protests from about April to June 1989 in Beijing, in Tiananmen Square particularly. And on June the 5th, there was a massacre. We don't know exactly how many people were killed in these protests, but it could be a few people, it could have been tens of thousands. The reports were very unclear at the time. Now, what was interesting is the day after the massacre happened was this incident occurred. The tanks trundled into Beijing, into Tiananmen Square, and as they came in, protesters were lined up around this square, which was like an arena almost. And as they did so, this man suddenly appears from nowhere with two shopping bags. I'm never quite sure why he had two shopping bags. But he jumps out in front of these 17 tanks and he stops them. And it's really symbolic because this isn't just a man who's stopping some tanks, but this is a man, a symbol of a man defying the most terrifying regime that existed on earth at the time. He was seized and he was taken away. We don't know what happened to him. We don't even know his name, but his image lives on. I was thinking to myself last week, why does his image live on? What is it about this man that makes us stop and still remember him? He was listed in Time magazine as one of the most important men of the 20th century. Why? Well, I think it's because he represents what we want to be. I think he represents what we want to be. He's like us in the sense that he was someone who stood up for what is right. And ultimately, I think, fundamentally, if we're good people, we want to do the right thing. We want to stand up for what is right. And that is what this man has done. Now, I imagine if I was in that arena at that point, no matter what I felt about communism, no matter what I felt about democracy, I probably would have stayed back there. I don't know where you would have been on that point. Would you have dashed in there and stopped the tank knowing you were going to get killed? Or would you have stood back? See, if you're anything like me, you know what the easier thing is to do. The easier thing to do in this life is to stand back and just go with the flow. And when a challenge comes to you, not to respond to it. It's easier to do nothing. Think about it in your life. You know, you're in the office and someone's talking about something that morally you just can't agree with. That is terrible. I'm a Christian. I can't believe that. I can't go along with it. But actually, you know, if you say anything, you're going to be shot down in flames. So you just think, I can't possibly say anything at this moment. Or imagine you're in a group, usually women, it could be men as well. We're all prone to this. You sat around gossiping about someone. And you know you should try and stop it. But you just sit and think, good grief, if I do this now, I'm going to look a right nose. I can't say anything and stop this conversation. It's easier just to sit back and let it carry on. I can't interrupt this. Now, whether you know God or not, I think we can all relate to those moments when we know we should have done something and we just didn't. We couldn't do it. Now this morning we got an amazing story of three men to look at. Daniel 3 is a great story. There's nothing special about these men. I really want to get that home to you. These men are just like you and me. Yet what they do is something amazing. They accomplish something that we look at and we think, oh, I wish I could do that. Now, what do they do? Well, they do the right thing and they stand for what is right. And the big question is why? What is it that enables them to do this? It was God enables them to stand for him in the most difficult circumstance. And as we come to this passage, if we know God here this morning, he enables you to do things you could never imagine you would do. Do you believe that? He can give you strength that you just didn't know that you had. Now, he can do it. He enables us beyond our imaginations. So don't underestimate your God. If you know him this morning, don't underestimate him. Before we get into this passage, we need to know something of the background. Now, what is it? Who are these three men? We've had something already about what happened to them. This is about 600 years before Jesus Christ is born into this world, 600 BC. Israel's in a right mess. God is fed up with their disobedience to him, and he judges the nation of Israel. And at this point, Nebuchadnezzar, this great Babylonian empire, and the emperor, the king, come across to Israel and Judah and take away some of the people. It's an awful situation. You've seen it on your TV screens. You've seen it in the movies. You sat down watching TV, just nice family times there together. Suddenly the door is battered down. In come the guys with their guns and everything else. You can imagine it. They didn't have TVs, but you can just imagine the situation. And there's these four guys in their homes. They're stolen away. They're kidnapped. Who knows what happened to their parents? I don't know. They're taken from their country. Their heritage is ripped away from them. Their language is changed. Their religion has to go. Their whole identity goes. Even their names are changed to reflect the new gods that they're meant to serve. And yet, as you look through the first few chapters of Daniel, what happens to these men? They stay loyal to God. And what else happens to them? Well, it's clear that God is keeping his eye on them, because that's what God does. God never takes his eye off you. And you know that. You know that, you know, in those most dark situations, when you just feel alone, he's there watching you. He's there with you. And this is what's happening to these three men. They've testified to it previously, and now we see it really come into fulfillment. So we're going to look at this passage, right? We've got two points, that's all. The first point is this, three men who won't turn. And the second one is quite clever of me. The second one is three men who don't burn. So, look, this is a serious incident. It really happened. I think we can see this as a fairy story. This happened. Nebuchadnezzar, you can read about him, the Hanging Gardens of Babylon, all the rest of it. This guy existed. These three men existed. This situation happened. So don't underestimate it. Right, the first thing. First thing is three men who won't turn. Got an image that comes up on here. Do you remember this incident? You were probably watching it. I was going to put the Commonwealth Games on there, but you probably weren't watching that. So I thought we'd have the 2012 Olympics. Look, thousands of people gathered in the East End of London in this large arena to watch the greatest show on earth. It was an enormous privilege if you'd been invited along, or if you managed to get tickets to purchase your way into this stadium. Now, in this incident, as you can see in the first few verses, as we look at them, there is this massive ceremony that's happening. Nebuchadnezzar has built this tall, skinny, weird-looking statue. And it's in order to be worshipped, probably in response to chapter 2 of Daniel, if you know Daniel chapter 2. He has decreed it. He is the emperor. He is the king of the largest empire on earth. So he expects everybody to obey. So what he does, he calls out thousands of people, probably, throughout the empire, the leaders that have been entrusted with the keeping of the nation. And he says, come along to this massive ceremony in this huge natural arena. There is this gold image that stood at the end of it, shimmering in the sun as the sun is pouring down it. Everybody can see it, and something's going to happen. And so the herald comes out. He's got a large voice, this guy. And he tells them they must bow down and worship the statue. But if they don't bow down and worship the statue, they will die. Now, it's an enormous privilege to be there. You can imagine the quietest moment of the Olympic ceremony, someone standing up and shouting something hugely abusive. Everybody would look at them. Now, what are you going to do? You're there. Thousands of people are about to bow down and worship. What do you do? Because this is the situation which faces Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Now, if you've got no belief in God, if you're not a Christian, it's no issue. It's a no-brainer. Of course you're going to fall down, because what's the point of giving up your life for something you don't even believe in? But they've got a big problem. You see, they serve God. They know God. They know the first commandment, that you have no other gods before me. They can't possibly bow down. So they've got this huge tension. If we don't bow down, we're going to die. If we do bow down, we're letting down our God. So you can imagine in yourself now, there you are. What do? The herald shouts this. What are we going to do, guys? Do we bow down or do we stay standing? And you can imagine, well, you know, God's put us in this position of authority. I mean, surely he wouldn't mind if we bow down. He knows our hearts. He knows that we can do this. And we start to justify our position, don't we? Should they do the right thing or not? Should they play it safe or not? What would you do? You're not a Christian. The call's easy. You know, down you go. It's no brainer. No dilemma. But if you're a Christian, you know what you ought to do. The question is, are you bold enough? Are you bold enough to do it? You see, when you're at work or with your friends or, you know, your kids are up to stuff you know are wrong, you need to make a stand. But it just seems easier not to. It's easier not to. And this is the intense pressure that Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego are now under. And you know exactly what they're feeling, I guess, don't you? You know, I do. So what do they do? Well, look, these telltales appear in verse 10. Have you seen them in chapter 3, verse 10? These telltale guys appear. O king, they say, live forever. You have issued a decree, O king, that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and all kinds of music must fall down and worship the image of gold. And that whoever does not fall down and worship will be thrown into a blazing furnace. But there are some Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who pay no attention to you, O king. They neither serve your gods nor worship the image of gold you have set up. Wow, did you see that? There's three guys who don't bow down. Now imagine this. There are thousands of people who've gone down like a sack of potatoes at the sound of that music. And there are three who are standing. Have you ever been in church and the music starts and you were told to sit down but actually forget and stand up? It's embarrassing, but everyone sees you. Look, this is a deliberate act of them. This is not embarrassing, but everybody sees them. Right now, they stay standing. They literally remain standing in the face of opposition. And they have this private hearing with this King Nebuchadnezzar. And he is furious. He's absolutely fuming. But he's a kind guy on the surface of it. He gives them a little ensemble himself. You almost imagine the stereo being there. Look, guys, I'll play some music for you. I don't care what you believe. Just do as I say. It's easy. Just fall down. Here it goes. Get ready. And see what they say. See what they say. Verses 16 to 18. Here is the crucial verse or passage. O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we're thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to save us from it. And he will rescue us from your hand, O king. But even if he does not, we want you to know, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up. You know, Jesus tells us that when we are thrown before people and we don't know what to say, he'll give us the words to say. That's a promise. And here we see these men being given words which are incredible. Why do they stand? Look, they stand because they have faith in God. That is why they stand. They know God. They know all that he's done in their lives. You have a look, chapters 1 and 2. Despite the awful things that have happened, their family have been stolen from them, maybe killed, they've been taken from them. They know that God has been with them all the way through. And they know now what God is able to do. He can save us, they say. But here is the issue of faith. Look at this. He will rescue us from your hand. But even if he does not, we will not serve your gods. Imagine you're one of those three men. You incredibly hadn't bowed down. You'd stayed standing, okay? So you've gone past that point. You're actually there before Nebuchadnezzar. What would you now be wanting God to do? Because if you're like me at this point, you'd be saying, God, you know, if I make a stand for you, I want you to get me out of this place. I want you to rescue me. But what does faith say at this point? Faith says this, he will rescue us from your hand, but even if he does not. Faith is not blindly believing that God will always do what we want. Faith, real faith, is trusting that God will always do what he wants. That is what it is. Real faith is trusting that God will always do what he wants. So when Jesus is in the garden, he says, yet not my will, but yours be done. That is faith. Now, your God, if you know him, he can deliver you from that person who caused you terrible distress. He can do that. You can click his fingers, it's done. He can deliver you from that awkward, awful workplace that you're in, or that terrible illness, or that financial crisis, or that tightly held addiction, whatever it might be that you struggle with. He can do it, can't he? Because he's God. He can do anything. If he's God, then surely he can. Nothing is impossible for him. But look, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego know that. But they're not called by God to predict what he's going to do next. What they're called to do is faithfully declare who he is, to faithfully declare what he can do, and then to leave the consequences to him. That's his job. Our job is to be faithful to him. His job, actually, is he will always remain faithful to us. The same call is on your life. Okay, so there's really difficult moments. What do you do? Well, maybe sometimes we need to stand back and we need to quit trying to second guess what God's going to do next. That's not faith. What we need to do is we need to trust him in what we're called to and then proclaim his majesty in all that he allows us to go through. Real faith has God as its object, not us. And these men show us that real faith in God leads to bold actions for God. It's he who calls, it's he who enables. So that is what faith is like. Now, what about the next thing? Well, look at the cost. Nebuchadnezzar is banking on these men. He's counting the cost. He's a reasonable guy, I said. You know, it seems at some points. It's pretty obvious to him. You know, he's good at maths. Bow down equals life. Stay standing now equals death. He knows what is at stake. And for him, life is everything. Death is the end of everything. So it's obvious. Of course everyone's going to bow down. It's really obvious. That's all that there is in this life. It's the most important thing to anyone is life. So of course they'll go down. That's a logical conclusion. And that's what he expects of these three men. Now, it's like this for us too. We can see these guys. We can see these people in Iraq at the moment. And we can see the awful situations that are facing up to them. And the consequences that it leads to. And you can see when you're in work, when you're at home, when you've got those difficult moments, what a cost. What a cost it involves to stand for God. You know, if you stand for God this week, what might it cost you? Well, let's think about it. You might be ostracized by your family. It could be that you lose some friends or some work colleagues. Imagine it. Imagine you're with a group of friends and you're around their house and they're playing on some computer game and you know you shouldn't be playing with it. You know, if you say to them, look, guys, I think we need to stop playing this because this is really bad. God wouldn't be happy with us. They'll think you're weird. So you'd be ostracized by them. Or imagine this really, you know, really pertinent one at the moment, that you're in a small group having coffee and they're talking about gay marriage. And they say, someone says to you, oh, you're a Christian, aren't you? What do you think on it? What do you do? What an awkward moment that is. Do I stand for God or do I just, you know, these things are difficult. And what do you do? Think about not getting that promotion this week. Or that job that you wanted. You might be verbally abused. You might be threatened. You may be arrested. That can happen and does happen in this country at the moment, occasionally. For some around the world right now, it means death. And you know what? If you look back the last few years, on average, 20 Christians have died every hour for what they believe. So by the time we've run through this service, at least 20 believers would have died, probably, on the Lord of Avenues, because they've stood for Christ. It's no wonder, therefore, isn't it? As I stand here, this is really tough. I almost took some of this out, but I thought I can't, because this is such a challenge for me, and I'm sure it's a real, you know, challenge for us all as we think about it. It's no wonder it's so hard to make a stand because the cost appears to be so high. Now, what is it about these three men that makes them still stand? Well, look, they're not thinking, are they? Or they're thinking on a different level. It's got to be the latter. Nebuchadnezzar, what's wrong with this guy? Well, he sees life. He sees nothing beyond life. It was all about here and now. He can't see God. And as we sit here this morning and we go through our daily lives, so often I imagine you don't see God. You don't think about God when you're in work. You don't think about God when you're with your friends. He's not part of our everyday life, every moment of our life. You know, we're too busy playing on smartphones or having fun holidays or, you know, having friendships. It's great. These things are fine. But we get into the trap that this is all that life is. Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego didn't buy into that. They saw God. They had lots of things, these guys. They were leaders in the nation. But they saw God. They saw who they really were. And they're standing before this king right now. Here is this amazing king, probably dressed in all his robes. And they are these poor three men now. And what do they see of themselves? Well, they see a king next to them. But actually, these guys are children of the King of Kings. They see that they're far more precious than Nebuchadnezzar could ever imagine. And they see that they're God's treasured possession. Their God is everything to them. They see God. They've got a totally different perspective. You know, they've got their spiritual glasses on. Nebuchadnezzar doesn't see God. They see God. He's got it from the wrong perspective. And if you're a Christian, if you're Christ, then you are the same as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Most people you come into contact with this week will have no idea who you really are. But if you're a child of God, don't forget this, right? Don't forget this. You're a child of the King. That is who you are. That is why we're in those groups, and there's lots of challenging going on, and we think, good grief, I can't possibly speak out for God. You're a child of the King. You're his treasured possession. You're a new creation. The old has gone, the new has come. You know, in some ways, you've already died. I think that's part of the perspective here for these guys. They know their lives are done with. They're thinking eternally. They're thinking about bigger things than Shadrach, than Nebuchadnezzar ever could. And this is how we must see ourselves. You know, and the person you're sat next to right now, if they're Christ, see them in the same light. They're amazing. They're treasured by Christ. And also, think of those who don't know him. This is desperate for them. They're not his treasured possession. They don't know him. How do they manage in these difficult positions? I don't know. So this is what Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they're living out their faith. They're living out who they really are. So recognize who you are and live it out. Nothing trumps God for these three men. They're not mad. They're not mad. Nebuchadnezzar thinks they are. They're thinking more clearly than most of us could ever imagine, actually, probably. And they knew their God. So we must pray for each other. You know, I don't know whether you've prayed for yourself this week coming into it. Lord, I'm going to face some really hard situations this week. Lord, I know I'm going to face opposition. Will you help me in it? Because you can. You can. You must. Lord, I'm praying for John. He's facing this week. Can you pray? I'll pray for him, Lord, because he needs you on his side. He needs you to stand there with him. And so for each of us, can we not pray like that? Can we not face this week knowing that actually we are more than we can imagine? When we look in the mirror, that is not who you are. And you know that. You are more than that. What a difference this would make. I really think everything would be transformed in our lives if we saw him through our everyday lives. And he is there standing right with us. Right, next point, second point. Three men who don't burn. Look at Nebuchadnezzar. We've got a great, I've managed to find this picture of Nebuchadnezzar on the internet. Here he is. Right, he has lost it. He's absolutely lost it now. He's changed. Everything about this guy has changed. You can see his facial features have changed. His colour's changed. He's probably red at this point. You know, in the Bible, we don't even read the words that Nebuchadnezzar says, I reckon, because he's probably swearing his head off. He's so angry. He's lost his patience. He says, right, furnace, they'll die. I'm so angry, just turn it up to gas mark 7. They're going to die anyway. So what? You know, he's so lost his patience, he throws them in, even with their clothes on. And the strongest men, we had some strong men up here this morning, you know, the strongest men even burn in the fire, just on the periphery of out of it. So look, verse 22 to 23, look at these. The king's command was so urgent, and the furnace so hot, that the flames of the fire killed the soldiers who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, firmly tied, fell into the blazing furnace. Now, if you don't know the rest of the story, imagine you don't, because the next verse should really read this. Nebuchadnezzar wiped the sweat off his brow, walked away content that he had dealt with three men in such an accomplished way. But that's not the case. Nebuchadnezzar is not in control. Do you get that? He's not in control here. Someone else is in control. Okay, he thinks he is, but he's not. When you're facing opposition, those guys at the moment in Iraq, you know, they think they're in control. They're not in control. Oh dear, that's really easy to say, isn't it? But they're not in control. Our God surely is in control all the time. Nebuchadnezzar thinks he is, he's not. Okay, right, who else could be in control? Well, it's obvious, isn't it? If he's not in control, the other players in the party are three men. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego out in control. They stood their ground there, they've won the battle. No, they're not. Listen to this in Isaiah 43, which was written actually before these men were chucked in the fire, so they probably knew it themselves. The Lord says, when you pass through the waters, I will be with you. And through the rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. When you walk through fire, you shall not be burned, and the flame shall not consume you. Do you see who's in control? The Lord is in control. Look at him, there he is in the fire. Do you see it? Verse 24. King Nebuchadnezzar leaped to his feet in amazement and asked his advisors, weren't there three men that we tied up and threw into the fire? They replied, certainly, O king. He said, look, I see four men walking around in the fire, unbound and harmed, and the fourth looks like a son of God. Nebuchadnezzar, what do you expect to see right now? Nothing. What are you seeing? Well, good grief, at the very least, at the very most, I expect three men. You don't see anyone in a fight, do you? But he seemed to expect no more than that. What he sees is staggering. There's four men. What are they doing? Well, they're walking. They're unbound. They're unharmed. Everything that he put on them is gone. Who are they? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And who? We can argue about it, but it's the Lord. He's meeting with them in the fire. Do you see that? What a moment. This is absolutely fantastic. It's the worst possible scenario. You couldn't get a worse scenario than this. You're dying. But the Son of God is with them. This is what God's like, isn't it? Think of your own life. If you're a believer here this morning, have you never known those moments of the deepest and darkest, whether it's persecution or suffering, whatever it might be, he stands there with you. That's what he does. Lord, you are there with me. And you see what happens when God's people stand for him. He is glorified. And Nebuchadnezzar is really bad still. He still chops off all these men, all the other people. He chops them up and burns them in the fire and all the rest of it. He's still a bad guy. It comes good in chapter 4. Read it. But look, in fact, you always bring glory to God when you stand for him. You may think in your life, I can never bring glory to God. I can never make him happy. Oh man, if you stand for him this week, he is so pleased with you. You've brought glory to him. You know, the promise of the Bible, there's lots of them based on this sort of feature. If you stand for him, he'll be there with you. There's nothing about it. Oh no, don't bother standing for him because then he'll be really pleased with you. Nothing like that. That's Satan. That's doubts coming in and it's just wrong. When we stand for him, we always bring him glory. So look, at the end of it, they need to be called out from the fire. Did you see that? There's Jesus standing with them. They're having such a great time. They don't want to come out, would you? The place of persecution becomes the place of blessing. And Christ stands with them. And that is amazing. Because standing for God leads to his glory. And it leads to a closer walk with him, the one who saves us. He sent his son for you. He is an incredible God. And he meets with you through those darkest moments. We don't pray for persecution. We don't pray for difficulties. But he promises when we get them, which we will, he'll be there with us. You know, one of the most tragic things I see in my day-to-day life of work is when people come to the end of life. And I've had a few people recently this has happened to. And the tragedy is when they don't know God. It's awful. Awful. You know, what are you meant to do if you don't know him? When you come to those deepest moments of life, who do you stand with? Where's my friends? Where's everyone that I need right now? At the end of life, where are they? What do I do? I've got no one standing by the side of me. This is tragic. For you as a Christian, you haven't got that. He's always there with you, in the fire even. He's there. We've read about him. They've proclaimed him throughout this chapter, and now we see him gloriously. He is like a son of the gods. He's different. He is different. But he's always glorified when you stand up for him. But let's just close. Let's just close with some applications here quickly. Firstly, you can only really there should be a slide. You can only really stand for him if you really believe in him. So the question is, do you? Do you really believe in him? You can't stand for something you don't believe in. It'd be crazy to give your life for something that you don't even believe in and have faith in. That is just silly. So ask yourself the question, what do I see as the most important thing in life? Is he right up there? Are you Nebuchadnezzar? Are you seeing things at the same level only as Nebuchadnezzar? You've got, you know, a bit like me without my specs on. You can't see things clearly. Are you just seeing the here and now? Because if you are, this is desperate. This is tragic. You need to do something about it. Surely you want to be like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Not in a fire necessarily, but you want to know your God. You want him to be there with you. You've got a choice to make. All of us have a choice. You have a choice to make this morning. Do you want to get to know him or not? Do you want this God with you? Do you want him on your side? You've got to respond to him, really. The next thing. We'll bring the next one up. When you are challenged to stand, you must. There's no question about this. There is no moment when you can say, God is challenging me now to stand for him. But you know what? I think if I stand, he knows what's in my heart. He knows that I'm okay. He knows that I'll always put him first. But I just can't this moment. We need wisdom. Look at chapter 1 at some point. They're really wise, these guys. They didn't give in on everything and pick up on everything. But when it was something really important, they stood. And that is what you must do. That is what I must do. We must be faithful to him. You must leave the consequences to him. That's not your job. That's his job to work out what the consequences will be. But we need God-centered vision. We need to be clear about that. We need him as the focus of our lives. And he will enable you. That's really important, because that's the hardest bit. Lord, I want to, but I can't. Well, he can. And you must. You must stand for him this week. That's what these people in Iraq are doing. And thirdly, he is with you. He's with you. As we heard earlier, the children's talk. He may not rescue you from the fire. That verse earlier doesn't mean to say every time you get thrown in fire, he's going to rescue you. So don't try it in a bonfire. But look, the Christians who died throughout the ages, who've been martyred for burning at the stake. You know, it doesn't mean to say that he will rescue you every time you face difficulty. But what you do know is this, that he will stand with you. He's your friend. He's your brother. He is your king. He's your saviour. And he promises to be with you. And the place of trouble will become the place of blessing. So look, we're just going to have a moment or two to pray and to consider that. You've got choices to make. Will you stand for him or not? You can only stand for him if you know him. And if you know him, will you stand? He will enable you. He will be glorified. He will be with you through it. Let's just have a moment to reflect on.